Okay, so we're just about to begin our second in our series of a pre-Haggadah Shiurim, Pesach, and not too far away. This close to Pesach, I think who is ever in the Shiur is either ready for Pesach early, or alternatively taking a welcome break, much needed, or possibly thrown out of the house, and for whatever reason, all are welcome as we have our final preparations, at least shear-wise, for the Seder. And the halachic matter or mitzvah matter that I wanted to discuss this evening relates to the Leil HaSeder itself. It's quite central, really a central theme to the Seder night, and that is the issue of mesubim, of leaning or reclining. And it's, as we said, it's really one of the runs through the Seder. It's one of the questions of the Manishtana, of course. It's question number 4. The child notices, or we see to it that he notices, Shebachol Alelo, Sonu Ochlim, Ben Yoshim Ben Mesubin, whether upright or reclining, Halayla Ze Kulanu Mesubim. The child wants to know why, and it's a good Shaila. There is a Medrash, interestingly, which on some level provides a kind of a smach, a support or a remez in the Pasuk for Mesubim. In the beginning of Parshas Bishalach, the Pasuk says, Vayasev Elokim es ha'am derech ha-midbar yam suf. HaKadosh Baruch Hu did not lead us in a straight line, rather he took us on a somewhat circuitous route. Vayasev milashon saviv, says the Medrash Shmos Rabbah, Mikan, from here, Amru Chachomim, the sages said, Sha'afilu oni shebi Yisrael, even the poor among Israel, lo yochal ad sheyasev, should not eat unless he's reclining. Chazal made a something of an association between the viyasev of Hashem leading us on a roundabout route to ad sheyasev, which is, of course, from the expression of misubim. What exactly does that mean? We may yet need to find out. But it is a remez of sorts, a minatora from Mesubim, Atche Yosef from Vayasev. What are the practicalities before we get into some of the discussions or discussion points from Mesubim? So firstly, the Gemara says a person should recline specifically on the left side. And that's for a couple of reasons. Firstly, they don't want the food to go down the windpipe, and that's why it should be more on the left side, not on the right side, where that would be a concern. And additionally, a person eats with their right hand, and therefore they should lean on their left side to eat with the right hand. And even though those two reasons seem to be heading in the same direction, the nafka minha between them, of course, would be if a person is left-handed. So they normally eat with their left hand. So should they lean on the left side still for the issue of making sure the food doesn't go down the wrong pipe? Or should they perhaps lean on the right side to use their left hand for leaning? So the Gemara or the Poskim say, of course, what holds sway, so to speak, is the first answer. And therefore, everyone reclines on the left side, even if you're left-handed. I was actually in Rav Osher Weiss's house just a couple of weeks ago. I myself am left-handed, and I asked him, so if you everyone leans on the left side, so if you're left-handed, so which hand do you eat with? Should you somehow be leaning on your left hand and eat with your left hand also, or should everyone eat with the right hand? So he said the main thing is to lean on the left side, and whichever hand you're more comfortable with eating or drinking with, that's the one that you should use. So the only other practical matter is that you should be leaning on something. That's quite important. Sometimes people, for the interests of Mesubim, they move themselves to the left, but they're not actually leaning on anything, and you actually do not fulfill the concept of mesubim that way. It should be leaning on something. You could be leaning on an armrest, or even on the back of the chair, or even on the table, but it should be on something. As much as Seder night should be a night of elevation, it's not necessarily a night of levitation, so one should be leaning on something. What's it all about? What's mesubim all about? So the Rambam really sets the tone for the matter. And this is in Hilchos Chametz U'Matzah, Perek Zayin. And as is often the case, in order to get the full picture of where the Rambam, what he means to say in a particular halacha, it's often instructive to start from the halacha beforehand. And that is certainly the case here. He'll discuss mesubim im halacha Zayin, but already in halacha Vav, the Rambam brings the well-known adage of Chazal, Bechol dor vador, we know it from the Haggadah. The Rambam famously says it a little differently in the Mishneh Torah than we have it in the Haggadah. Let's read his words and then note the differences. Says Rambam, Bechol dor vador, in each and every generation, Chayv Adam Laharus, as Atzmo, a person is obligated to display himself, Ki ilu hu be'atzmo yotza ato mishibud Mitzrayim, as if he has just now himself come out from Shibud Mitzrayim. Amazingly, that's part of the mitzvah. And he quotes the psukim, Ve'osan hotzi misham, and so on and so forth. What is significant about these words of Rambam, even if we know them from the Haggadah? Famously, the Rambam has two changes. Firstly, in the Haggadah it says, Chayev Adam Liro says Atzmo, a person is obligated to see themselves, meaning to consider themselves. It's a matter of self-perception. The Rambam says, Chayev Adam Leharos es Atzmo, a person is obligated to display himself as if he came out of just Mitzrayim, which is will have ramifications, as we'll see, from Liros to Leharos. But beyond that, the Rambam also says, as if he came out ato with an ayin, ato now from Mitzrayim. In other words, according to the Rambam, this is one of the unique halachas of Seder night. As we know, there's a mitzvah to remember Yetzias Mitzrayim every night, but Seder night has many unique features, and one of them is to display himself as if he just now came out of Mitzrayim. All of that is background for Mesubim. Because the Rambam begins the next halacha by saying, Lefichach, therefore, and the word Lefichach is a very highly significant word, because as it suggests, therefore means, based on what we just said, the following is now happens. Lefichach, therefore, Kishesoid Adam Balaila Hazeh, when a person eats on this night, Sarech Le'echov Lishtos Vehu Mesev Derech Cheirus. And he needs to be reclining as a display of Cheirus. In other words, according to the Rambam, the concept of Mesubim, of reclining, which is a display of freedom, is a direct expression of the obligation that one should display themselves as if they just came out of Mitzrayim. That's the celebration. But what does it mean? What it means is that the mitzvah of reclining on Seder night has a dual aspect to it. One is Derabbanan, and one is Derisa. By which we mean that the obligation, as an obligation, to eat and drink reclining, and the matzah and the arbakosis, etc., that's an obligation derabbanan. The Torah never said you have to be mesubin, but the Torah says you have to do something. It's the rabbanan who quantified what that thing is. But the idea that somehow for a person to display themselves as if they have just been released, that is the fulfillment of the Torah mitzvah of the psukim that the Rambam quotes. So if we could formulate it in one sentence, mesubim on Seder night is a chiyuv derabbanan, right? The Rabbanan said it's got to be mesubim, but it's a kiyum deraisa. It is a fulfillment of the deraisa idea. And this now becomes the chiyuv of the obligation of Mesubim, and the Shulchan Aruch states quite plainly that if a person ate and drank the matzah or the arba kosos without Mesubim, they have not fulfilled their obligation. They would need to do it again. That is the ruling of Shulchan Aruch. So certainly important to remember. And really at the epicenter here of the halachic discussion is when we say that you haven't fulfilled your obligation if you, for example, ate your matzah not reclining, or you had one of your arba kosos not reclining. Which obligation have you not fulfilled? And here there are two possibilities. One could say that the obligation that you haven't fulfilled is the mitzvah of eating matzah, or the mitzvah of arba kosos, which means that in the same way that there are other parameters in order to fulfill your obligation, amount has to be a kazayas, time frame needs to be within the certain amount of time. So mesubim is another parameter of this mitzvah that the Rabbanon supplied, which you need to satisfy to fulfill the mitzvah, at least on a Rabbanon level. That's one possibility. So again, when the Shulchan Aruch says that if you ate your matzah or you drank your arba kosos, but you weren't mesubim, you haven't fulfilled your obligation, it means on a Rabbanon level, you haven't fulfilled your obligation of matzah and of arba kosos. The alternative is to say, no, you have for sure fulfilled the mitzvah of matzah and arba kosos, but you haven't fulfilled the mitzvah of mesubim. That's what you haven't been yotze. And the reason why you need to go back and eat your matzah again or have your drink the cup again is because that is the vehicle through which Chazal say you display freedom through mesubim, specifically through the matzah and the arba kosos. So you need to do them again in order to fulfill through them the mitzvah of mesubim. Okay, so what have we discovered so far? The leaning is on the left side, and it's for the matzah and for the arba kosos. And as far as the Shulchan Aruch is concerned, it's critical to fulfilling the obligation, whatever that obligation is. But there is a bit more to say here. The Gemara says in the 10th parak of Maseches Pesachim that it says two things, and don't hear the first one before you've heard the second. The first thing that the Gemara says is that women do not need to lean. Women are exempt from leaning. And there's a number of explanations, but given the situation, it wasn't a way that they would necessarily themselves display freedom, and therefore women are exempt from mesubim. That's interesting. But then the Gemara goes on to say, but if she's an isha chashuva, if she's an important woman, or if we may borrow the term, if she is a woman of some importance, well then, says the Gemara, she's obligated in mesubim. How do you define isha chashuva? That is the question. Well, however you define it, there's a very important statement of Tosfos. It's quoted from the Tosfos by two of the Ashkenazi Rishonim, Rabbeinu Yeruchim and the Mordechai. Enter Tosfos and say, Kol hanoshim shelonu chashuvos hein. All of our women are important. How did that happen? I don't know. But Tosfos, or maybe we'll discuss that quite soon, what brought this about. But Tosfos say, Kol hanoshim shelonu chashuvos hein. So this is the Rabbeinu Yeruchim and the Mordechai. They're talking in the mid-1300s, saying that all of our women are chashuvos. It took the rest of the world a few centuries to catch up, but all's well that ends well. So it's seemingly everyone is now in the same halachic category, as if to say everyone is now obligated in mesubim. Men were always obligated. Women who are all considered chashuvos are all obligated. So everyone is back now with the mitzvah of mesubim. There's just one thing. The Ramah, and of course Ashkenazi practice doesn't move without the Rama. The Rama writes, I've never seen any women leaning at the Seder. So that's a bit puzzling because it's specifically Ashkenazi Rishonim who see within them this status that they should be obligated to lean. But the Rama says, I never saw it. And he offers an explanation as to why that is. The personality behind this explanation could potentially change everything. And he is called the Ra'avyo. The Ra'avyo, Rabbeinu Eliezer ben Yoel Halevi, another of the great Ashkenazi Rishonim, he's in the 1100s, roughly the same time period as the Rambam, actually. And the Ra'avyo, he has his opinion about Mesubim, which, by the way, no one accepted, but everyone knows about, and makes perfect sense, and still no one accepted it. Says the Ra'avyo, nowadays, and by nowadays he means in the 1100s, people, certainly in our locale, you know, you're in France or Germany or at that time, that people don't recline. It's not a festive thing to recline. And therefore, says Ra'avyo, I don't think that one needs to do Mesubim anymore. And that's it. That is the opinion of the Ra'avyo, cited by a number of Rishonim. Again, I think everyone at some stage has really thought the same thing that the Ra'avyo thinks or says. Namely, this is not how we display freedom or celebration anymore, by reclining. And yet, the Beis Yosef, Rabbi Yosef Karo in the Beis Yosef, he cites this statement of the Ra'avyo and says, no one accepted it. No one took on the position of the Ra'avyo. Everyone continues to be Mesubim. But the big question is, why? After all, the Ra'avyo said, we don't do that anymore. It's not celebratory for us anymore. Why do we still do it? Well, presumably, because that's the tradition. That's how Seder was always done. And even though it's slightly no longer in vogue, nevertheless, everyone at the Seder understands that that's the idea that's being communicated, and therefore we continue the Mesorah, so to speak, and we continue to do Mesubim. Back to women. Noshim Chashuvos, says the Rama, if you recall. Rama says, they're all called Chashuvos, but I've never seen any woman lean. Presumably, says the Rama, the reason why is because they rely on the Ra'avyo, who says that we don't really do that anymore, so they don't do it. That's his explanation of why women don't lean. The only question is, I thought we don't accept the opinion of the Ra'avyo. So we seem to be neither here nor there. In other words, the Ra'avyo says we don't lean anymore and we ignore him. Women should be leaning, but they don't lean. Why? Because they rely on the Ra'avyo. So how does that work? Says Rav Shlomo Zalman Orbach as follows. Around the time that the Tosfos are saying that women have Noshim Chashuvos status, and should we wonder, by the way, what happened to give them this Noshim Chashuvos status, so some Mefarshim suggest that this is due to the Charamim of Rabbeinu Gershom, who really gave women that more security in the sense that she can't be divorced against her will. You can't marry more than one wife. She's it. She is the one. And therefore, around about these early Ashkenazi Rishonim time, women become chashuvos, so to speak. Chashuvos. That's the very same time the Ra'avyo is noting that we don't really celebrate by leaning anymore. And now, says Rav Shlomo Zalman, do we understand why women rely on the Ravyo's approach, but men don't? Because for men, there's an issue of doing the Seder as it always was. Well, since time immemorial, but at that time, only the men leaned. And therefore, if it's not purely applicable anymore, But it's just for the Masorah. So only those who have a Masorah of leaning continue to do so. And that's the men. But it's the women, at the same time that they became in principle obligated to lean as Noshim Chashuvos, that's the time when the Rav Yosef says, but we don't really lean anyway. And therefore they don't have a Masorah to continue. And that's why they rely on the Rav Yosef. So this is, in a synopsized form, some of the halachic highlights. Of course, the halacha is that women are not obligated to lean. They can, if they want, for sure. Dare I say, if they are thusly inclined. But even if they do not lean, the more important thing, certainly for women, but really for everyone, is that they should be comfortable. In other words, we shouldn't lose sight of sitting in a way which denotes a celebration on our terms, in addition to, for those who have that Masorah, to keep up the Masorah of Mesubim, which is more men than the women. Just a final point on Mesubim, which is absolutely astonishing. And it comes from the Vilna Gaon. Because the Vilna Gaon is also responding to the Rav Yosef's point that we don't really celebrate lean in a way that denotes celebration anymore. So why do we still do it? Says Vilna Gaon, we have said so far that it's about, you know, keeping up the Masorah, keeping up tradition. The Vilna Gaon says something else. There are two values on Seder night. Value number one, to display freedom. Value number two, to do things that are unusual. That's built into the night also, so that the children should ask, etc. So much so, says the Vilna Gaon, the Manishtana, which dates back to temple times, originally did not have the question of Mesubin in it. The four questions originally were included Korban Pesach, as we spoke about last week, that needs to be specifically roasted, as opposed to on all other nights. You can prepare the meat in any other way. Halayla hazeh, it has to be roasted. That was the fourth question. Mesubim was not the fourth question. And the reason why Mesubim was not in the Manishtana is because it wasn't a Nishtana. It wasn't unusual. In the time of the Beis HaMikdash, if people lean in a celebratory meal or in a festive meal, it's Yom Tov, they'll be leaning. No one is going to see that as being unusual. Except what happened? But as the Rav Yosef said, but people no longer lean. So should we not lean anymore? Says the Vilna Gaon, we do. Why? It's very simply shifted department in the Seder night value framework, going from being a celebratory gesture to being an unusual gesture. And thus it gained entry into the Manishtana, which is a big chiddush, but of course that's the Vilna Gaon. And interestingly, the Aruch HaShulchan says this independently, this idea that nowadays we don't do it, but it's done for a shinui, but it was preceded, of course, by the Vilna Gaon. So these are some classic comments with regards to the issue of Mesubin on Seder. So I'd like to now move towards the Haggadah itself, to the text of the Haggadah. And we'll start actually at a later stage in Maggid. We'll work our way backwards. And that is Rabbi Gamliel's famous three things. If you didn't say these three things, you didn't fulfill the mitzvah. And once again, just apropos of our earlier discussion, which mitzvah did you not fulfill? You didn't fulfill the mitzvah of Pesach, Matzah, and Maror, if you didn't supply the reasons for them. Or maybe you didn't fulfill the mitzvah of telling the story, if you didn't supply the reasons for Pesach, Matzah, and Maror. So, once again, when we say Lo Yotze Yidei Chovoso, and when you have a confluence of different mitzvahs, you have to be alert as to which mitzvah is potentially at stake. Either way, one of the things that one needs to present the reason for is Matzah. What's it all about? We ask. Matzah zushanu ochlim. Al shumma. And as we know, the Haggadah says, just to read two or three lines, al shum, you know what it's about, matzah shelo hispik, but seikam shelavoseinu lahachmitz, that the dough, it wasn't able to rise, at shenigla aleim melech malchi amlochim, HaKadosh Baruch Hu, uga alam, until Hashem appeared and redeemed them. We moved out quickly. We quote the Pasuk. We came out b'chipazon in such a hurry. The dough did not have time to rise. That is a quote from the Haggadah. Now, what's very interesting about this answer that we give in the Haggadah? It's not the same answer that was given by Rabbi Gamliel. What do we mean by that? Much of the template of Maggid is actually to be found in the Mishnah. A lot of the Haggadah is in the Mechilta, the drushes, etc. But the template for how to do the Seder night and things to say is in the 10th Perek of Psachim in Arvei Psachim. And there you will find Rabbi Gamliel Haya Omer. Kol shelo omer shlosha dvarim eilu b'pesach lo yotza yedecha vaso pesach, matzah, and maror. And let's get to matzah, because he then proceeds to give the explanations. Matzah. So what's matzah all about? Says Rabbi Gamliel, al shum shenigalu avoseinu mimitzrayim, because our ancestors were redeemed. That's it. How were they redeemed? Doesn't say. How quickly? Doesn't say. What about the dough? Nothing. So this is very interesting, because the Haggadah is explicitly based on Rabbi Gamliel. The Haggadah itself begins with Rabbi Gamliel Haya Omer. So we're obviously taking our cue for Rabbi Gamliel, but when it comes to matzah, we don't seem to give the same answer that he gives. Or more correctly, as strange as it sounds, he doesn't give the answer that we give, because he just says we were redeemed, but the Haggadah goes into much more detail. Where is that coming from? If we're ostensibly meant to be presenting Rabbi Gamliel's explanations of things. Says the Noda Bihuda in his drushes, I believe a very profound thing for us. Because really what the Noda Bihuda is saying is, you have to distinguish between Seder in the time of the Beis HaMikdash and Seder in the time of Golos. As we began to speak about last week from when we talk about Halach Ma'anya. But Seder is of course so different. In the Beis HaMikdash, when the Jewish people are in Geula mode, or in a state of Geula, so Pesach is quite different. When the Jewish people are back in Golos, so the Pesach Seder, it begs its own question, namely, why are we commemorating leaving the Golos of Mitzrayim if we find ourselves in another Golos? Wherefore the celebration of the first one? But this is the difference between Rabbi Gamliel in the Mishnah and the Haggadah's answer, which is albeit based on Rabbi Gamliel, but which is more elaborate, because Rabbi Gamliel in the Mishnah is living in the time of the Beis HaMikdash. This itself is a very interesting question. Whenever you see Rabbi Gamliel, don't forget there are two Rabbi Gamliels, grandfather and grandson. Rabbi Gamliel HaZaken lived yet in the time of the Beis HaMikdash. His grandson, Rabbi Gamliel of Yavne, is of course post Beis HaMikdash. But the Noda Bihuda, as do many others, understands that Rabbi Gamliel in the Mishnah is Rabbi Gamliel HaZaken in the time of the Beis HaMikdash. So if you're in a time of Geula, one could say Pesach is pure celebration. Meaning everything that Pesach is meant to give you, you've got. Because it was to take you out of Golos with a view to bringing you to the land where you are, and therefore all you need to do is remember that original Geula, and nothing else needs to be said in that regard. But how different it is, says the Noda Bihuda, when you're in Golos. When you're in Golos and you're celebrating leaving an earlier Golos, so then something more needs to be said. Because why are you celebrating? You're almost back where you started. Clearly, the way that we relate to leaving Mitzrayim when we're yet in Golos or again in Golos has to be that if we left once, we can leave again. meaning it's not only something to celebrate, it's something to invigorate. It's something to give us chizuk, not just to commemorate, but it's something to strengthen our vision of getting out of our own golus. And that's why in the Mishnah, in the time of the Beis HaMikdash, matzah, we were redeemed. That's it. And we can get on with the Seder because we're redeemed. But when you're in Golus, you say more about the matzah. And what do you say? You say, you know, we were in Mitzrayim, and then we left like that. Before you looked around, we were out. Meaning, and what's the underlying message? That's how Geula can work. Right? The Jewish people were really in a terrible situation, and how quickly things turned around for them. And what's the subtitle here? And how quickly they can turn around for us as well. So matzah has this chizuk message in a time of Golus, and that's why we elaborate more on the meaning of matzah for what it could mean for us as well in our own Golus. What's very interesting is this idea that we see in the words of Chazal, that is to say between the Mishnah and the Haggadah, different inflections within matzah, different messages coming out from the matzah. We mentioned last week, and I believe that it's most worthwhile to follow up on this parallel, that Pesach is to Sukkos what leaving Egypt is to coming to Eretz Yisrael. As we discussed last week, Pesach is not really about coming to Eretz Yisrael. It's about the whole process beginning, and it's Pesach, Shavuos, and Sukkos. Leaving Egypt, getting the Torah, and entering Eretz Yisrael. Sukkos is about entering Eretz Yisrael. And I came across a fascinating comment from the Netziv. It's not in the HaMikdavar. It's actually a drasha that he gave in 1860. It was on Chol HaMoed Sukkos. And the caption of the drasha is that it was for the Chanukah of the Chanukah's Beis HaMedrash in Volozhin, which either meant that they redid something in Volozhin, or there was some other Beis HaMedrash, or they rebuilt, or whatever. Volozhin people can fill in that information. But the Netziv gave a drasha on that Chol HaMoed Sukkos, and he takes us to the Psukim of Sukkos, which, of course, are not that far away from Pesach, because the laning on the second day of Pesach is it talks about Sukkos. It's from Parshas Emor. Shoro Kesef. And what do we say there? We say that Sukkos is Chukas Olam Nedoro Seichem, an everlasting statute, Bechodesh Hashvi Tochogu Oso, in the seventh month, Tishrei. What do we say? Basukkos Teishu Shivas Yomim, so dwell in Sukkos for 7 days. Kola Ezrach B'Yisrael Yeshu Basukkos. Every Ezrach. What is an Ezrach? How do we translate that word? Ezrach. Does it mean a citizen? What does it mean to be a citizen in pure terms? Either way, Ezrach clearly refers to someone who is, shall we say, established there. Kol Ezrach b'Yisrael yeshvu basukos. And then we say, L'man yudu doroseichem, the famous pasuk that your generations shall know, I sat you in Sukkos when I took you out of Mitzrayim, and Yashem Elokeichem. Those are the two or three psukim about Sukkos. What's interesting about them? We start by saying it's Chukas Olam, an everlasting statute. And Chukah, of course, always has the connotation of we don't really know what it's about. The Pasuk then proceeds to tell us exactly what it's about. L'man yedu deroseichem. How does that square with being called a Chukah and then giving me the reason? And what's with the Ezrach? How does he... What if you're not an Ezrach? I mean, what does that mean? And the reason why I think it's very significant is because a lot of Sukkos is about being Chag HaAsif. It's the festival of the harvest, or bringing in the harvest. And there's a lot of discussion about that, rightly so. But the Jewish people haven't always been bringing in their own harvest. And very often the way that they live, it's not really a significant time for them in that respect. So where does that leave Sukkos? And that's why, says the Netziv, the Pasuk begins by saying, Sukkos is Chukas Olam. It is a constant mitzvah. The mitzvah will not change. you know what will change? The reason why you'll do the mitzvah. That changes whether you're in Eretz Yisrael, in a time of Geula again, or if you're in Golus. How so? Because the mitzvah of Sukkah comes to deal with both of those states. But of course, they're different states, and it has a different message depending on what state the Jewish people are in. If the Jewish people are where they should be, namely in the land of Israel, and they all have the state called Ezrach, Kol ha'ezrach b'Yisrael yeshvu basukos, but what does it mean to be an Ezrach? It means established. But sometimes you can be established in the land in a wrong way, meaning that you feel that you're the balabayit, and v'ram levavecha, as you know, especially when the harvest comes in, you're on top of the world. And if you're on top of the world, you might forget everyone else, including Hashem. And therefore, says the Pasuk, this is the time to go and sit in Sukkos, which is a very humble abode, because you've got to make sure you don't lose your head. If you're an Ezrach, go sit in a Sukkah. That is the message of Sukkos for the Ezrach in Yisrael. There's just one thing. We're not always Ezrachs in Yisrael. What if we're not Ezrach? And what if we're not in the land of Israel? What if we've been thrown out? What if we're at the mercy of who knows who, somewhere in Golus? So our issue when it comes to Sukkos is not that we feel on top of the world. We might actually feel on the bottom of the world. And now what? So the last thing I need is to sit in a Sukkah now. I feel bad enough. I'm humbled enough. So what is the Sukkah for now? Says the Netziv, that's the second Pasuk. Leman yedu derosechem. There will be generations who will need the Sukkah for the complete opposite reason. Namely, remember, you came out of Mitzrayim. Sukkos hashavti. I sat you in Sukkos. I took care of you. I was with you. I was looking out for you. I was supervising you. I was directing your affairs. You're in the middle of nowhere, but I was there with you. Says the Netziv, when the Jewish people are in the middle of nowhere, they need to sit in the Sukkah to remember that. So it's so interesting to see how the very same duality that exists within Pesach, the message from the Matzah is different if you're in a state of Geula, whether you're in a state of Golus. So too, on the other end of the year, but of course they all work together as a team, the mitzvah of Sukkah itself is, as per the Pasuk itself, according to the Netziv, also has two messages, depending on what state it catches the Jewish people in. You're an Ezrach, sit in a Sukkah, to treat your state of Ezrach. You're in exile, sit in a Sukkah, for the opposite reason, to give you chizuk in exile. Remember Anani HaKavod, and so on and so forth. And so, if we could summarize what we've seen so far, is we have a first response, I would say, or one response so far of why we would celebrate Seder night in Golus. Namely, we celebrate it in order to recharge our anticipation for the Geula from this Golus. That's what's so very interesting about Seder night, is that it looks backwards and it looks forwards. You look backwards at Yetzias Mitzrayim, and when you've done that properly, you then look forwards again at your own exit from Golus with new vision. There is a very interesting comment of the Sfasemis that the Afikoman, as we know, is the middle matzah is broken into two, and the smaller piece stays in front of you, and then the larger piece, it's afikoma and tzofun. It's hidden away. And when does it come back? Later on. And says the Sfasemes, that's really what's happening with Yetzias Mitzrayim. In other words, the Geula from Mitzrayim at the time was partial. It wasn't complete because here we are back in Golus. So a piece of that Geula, and in fact the larger piece, is broken off and put away. And it's softened and it's hidden, but it comes back at a later stage. And that's really when we start to shift our vision forwards to the future Geula, based on our having connected with the initial Geula from Mitzrayim. And more specifically, as the Mefarshim say, Our experiences in Egypt were what you could call the Maase Avos, right? The the formational experience, both of Golus and of Geula. And they are the root, in a sense, to which all the subsequent exiles are branches. Once you've been redeemed from Mitzrayim, you've been redeemed at a root level, you already have the capacity for redemption from all of those branches. And that's really the backwards and forwards relationship that we have with time on Seder night. So that is the first answer with regards to, again, to summarize, if we're back in Golus, why are we celebrating? Because we celebrate the capacity to leave this Golus as well, which we received when we left Mitzrayim all those years ago. But there is another approach which I think is equally important, and this should really be part of our vision on Seder night. There is a well-known section where we start to talk about the mitzvah of telling the story, and it gets, we discuss the parameters. Yochel Meresh Chodesh. Straight after the four sons, Yochel Meresh Chodesh. You might think that the mitzvah to tell about Yetzias Mitzrayim is from Meresh Chodesh. Talmud Lomar Bayom Hahu. So the Torah says, no, you don't tell the story from the beginning of the month, but rather only on that day. Ask the Haggadah, Ibayom Ahu. So if it's on that day, Yochel Miba'od Yom, I might think that it's from earlier on in that day, which is effectively, in a sense, the day before. So Talmud Lomar Ba'avur Zeh. Now that's what the Pasuk says, V'igalata Levincha, Bayom Hahu, on that day, Ba'avur Zeh, for this, Asa Hashem Li B'tzeisi Mimitzrayim. And what is Zeh? Ba'avur Zeh Lo Amarti, Ela B'shar Sheish Matzah U'Moror Munachon Lefanecha. Ba'avur Zeh is when you point to the two items, Matzah and Moror, and that's when you tell the story. So to summarize what we've said, we begin with possibly a month. I might think from the beginning of the month. No, says the Torah, that day. Ah, if that day, I might think then from earlier on in that day. No, ba'avur zeh, only on Seder night when you have matzah and maror. So then we have our time set and we proceed to tell the story. But if we try and be attentive to the flow of what we've just said, we should meet a problem. The first, I might have thought, thus the verse says, is easy to follow. I might have thought from Rosh Chodesh, for whatever reason. Says the Torah, no, on that day, Bayom Ahu, so now I know it's not from Rosh Chodesh, it's on that day. But then the Haggadah says, well, if you say Bayom Ahu, I might have thought that it's from earlier in that day, which is really the day before. How could you think that? You've already passed that point. You've already stated Bayom Ahu. It's on that day, not the day before. So we already have information that should preclude ever thinking that it could be an earlier date, because we've already said Bayom Ahu. It must be that when we say, if it's Bayom Ahu, I might think it's the day before, what we're saying is, I might have thought that the day before is the Bayom Ahu. I might have thought that when it says V'galata B'levincha Bayom Ahu, maybe you're talking about the day before. Why on earth would I think that Bayom Ahu is the day before Pesach? Says Maharal, because the day before is when you bring the Korban Pesach. And I might have thought that is the Bayom Ahu. Why would I think that? Because, says Maharal, what's leaving Mitzrayim all about? It's about leaving the jurisdiction of Paro and entering the jurisdiction of Hashem. So the fascinating point about the Korban Pesach is that Korban Pesach is Avodah, through which we become Avdei Hashem, which means the process of shifting from the jurisdiction of Paro to the jurisdiction of Hashem began with the bringing of the Korban Pesach. So maybe that is actually the critical timestamp of Yetzias Mitzrayim. Really what the Maharal is saying is, from a significant point of view, the concept of leaving Mitzrayim was activated even before we took a step out of the country. We were still in our houses in Mitzrayim, but we already left because we've already brought the Korban Pesach, which means we don't belong to Paro anymore. We belong to Hashem. Everything else is just a matter of location. But in terms of vocation, we left. So much so that I might have thought this is the day to tell the story. And the significance of this idea is that this is really the inner track of the celebration of Pesach. That is to say, the outer track of Pesach is celebrating our, let's call it, political freedom from Mitzrayim, freedom from slavery and geographical release and all of those things. That's without a doubt the outer casing of Pesach. But here we see that the inner lining, or the inner content of Yetzias Mitzrayim, is who do we belong to, not where are we, and in terms of geography, but to in whose jurisdiction are we? To whom do we belong? And that inner element of Pesach is something that once we received it, we never lost it, even in Golus. And that is the second answer to the question as to why we would celebrate leaving Mitzrayim if we're still in Golus. The premise behind the question is we're back where we started. That's not true. It could be that politically we're back where we started, and historically sometimes, if one could say, even worse. But in terms of what Yetzias Mitzrayim is all about, there was never any going back from Mitzrayim. And no Golus has ever undone what Yetzias Mitzrayim did to connect us with Hashem. That's why the Meshech Chochma says in Parshas Bo, one of the psukim, it says, V'chagosem oso chag l'Hashem, you shall celebrate it as a festival for Hashem, chukas olam techaguhu, shall be an everlasting celebration. What does this mean? Once again, that expression, chukas olam, says Meshech Chochma, it means if you celebrate it as a festival for yourselves in terms of your political state, there may be years where you'd question whether you should really even be celebrating anymore, because maybe you're back where you really are back where you started politically. But if you celebrate it as a Chag Lashem, about your connection with Hashem, so then chukas olam techaguhu. That's an everlasting. That will never go away. So there will never be no reason to celebrate. There will always be reason to celebrate Pesach, whatever temporal circumstances you may be in. And in fact, there is a comment later on in Parshas Bo of Meshech Chochma, and sometimes he just leaves you agape. Because on our pasuk, V'higadot levincha, and this is in just to get the place. It's in Shmos Perik Yud Gimel Pasuk Ches. You should tell your child on that day. Ba'avur zeh, for the sake of this, asa Hashem li betzeisi mitzrayim. Hashem did for me when I left Mitzrayim. The well-known pasuk. But the question is, what is the meaning of the word ba'avur zeh? For this, it's for this. What's the this? In the statement, ba'avor zeh. So Meshech Chochma begins with what he calls a pshat answer, and then he'll take us back to the Haggadah. If you want to know the pshat answer as to what this is, says Meshech Chochma, have a look at the verse in context. Because what does it say? This is Perek Yud Gimel, this is the Kaddish Li, for those who say with tefillin. Pasuk Hay says, "Vayakiv Yecha Hashem," when Hashem brings you to the land of the Canaanite and the Chitti and the Amori, etc., and you shall perform this avoda. Perek Yud Gimel is about Hashem, is about Pesach in the land of Israel. Back again, Pesach in the land of Israel. When Hashem brings you to the land of Israel, you shall perform this avoda. So when you tell your child ba'avor zeh, it's for this that Hashem did all those things. It means in order that I keep Pesach in the land of Israel. That's the Zeh. The question is, why would I think not to? And Meshech Chochmah, unusually, I can only recall another one occasion where he does this. Maybe there's another one or two. But he explains with a mashal. He gives a parable of someone, his daughter was of marriageable age, and so he finds a husband, and as is often the case for the first number of years, it certainly used to be the minhag in many places, all expenses were on the father-in-law. In some cases that's changed, either in the sense that it doesn't happen or it doesn't stop, but regardless, so all expenses were on him for a certain amount of time, and everything was almei menuchos, and everyone was happy, and it was wonderful, and so his wife, meaning the father-in-law's wife, who I guess is the mother-in-law, so she was very happy. She says, "Look, the husband is so devoted to our daughter, and he's such a good husband, and it's so wonderful," and so the father-in-law says to her, "That we won't really know." We can't know as long as all expenses are on me, because how can he prove his devotion? How can he prove his faithfulness? What is he doing for her? It's only when our support stops and he has to start now supporting them, then you'll see the extent of his devotion. And in a good scenario, when that happens, so then you say, oh, and now it was worth it. The start that we gave them was worth it, because see how, you know, diligently and devotedly and responsibly he's continuing. Says Meshech Chochmah, the first Pesach that we kept, and the first number of Pesachim ultimately that we kept, were surrounded by miracles. We're almost like in that initial phase where all expenses are on Hashem. Of course, ultimately they always are all on Hashem, but we were literally not doing anything. Which means Hashem made a great investment by taking us out of Egypt. And the question is, why was it so necessary? So that we'd keep Pesach in the wilderness? Of course we're going to keep Pesach in the wilderness. We're living on miracles, and this is part of our relationship. So why was it necessary to have such a high-end production with all of those miracles and taking us out of Egypt? It's not so that we'll keep Pesach in the wilderness. It's so that we'll keep Pesach in the land of Israel. When the miracles stop, or more correctly, when overt miracles become covert miracles, but we are, so to speak, earning our own way, what's to make sure that we maintain our devotion and maintain our connection and maintain our faithfulness to that relationship? So if we do that, it was worth all the miracles in getting us out of Mitzrayim to make sure that we keep the faith. And we maintain the relationship even in the land of Israel. And that, says the Meshech Chochmah, is the pshat of Ba'avor Zeh. We've come to the land of Israel. It was so that we keep Pesach even in the land of Israel that Hashem did all those miracles. He wants the relationship to last, to weather, to go, to not only to last as long as there's open miracles there, but even as things are getting more, so to speak, natural, that we still maintain that relationship. For that, he did all those miracles. Says Meshech Chochmah, thus far the pshat. And then he says, and Chazal took this one stage further. Why? Because what does the Haggadah say on Ba'avor Zeh? B'shar sheyesh matzah u'maror munachim lefanecha. When matzah and maror are in front of you. Now we know that when the Seder is as it should be, you don't just have matzah and maror, you have Pesach matzah and maror. Why is there no mention of Pesach in the Haggadah? So, of course, we would naturally say, well, because we don't have the Korban Pesach, and therefore it has to be appropriate to the state that we're in. Ideally, Pesach should be in this formula, but currently it's not there. But it says, Meshech Chochmah, no. Pesach is deliberately missing, because the point of this drasha is that it's specifically for a time where you only have matzah and maror. Which means, what type of time are we talking about? A golos time. Ba'avor zeh. In other words, you see what Chazal did, says Meshech Chochmah. The pasuk says that Hashem did all those miracles so that we keep our relationship even as we move from the wilderness into the land of Israel. And Chazal took it one stage further. And even if we're somehow evicted from the land of Israel, and we seem to be back where we started, what will ensure that we keep the relationship then? Because if we do, Yetzias Mitzrayim was worth it. Ba'avor zeh, even if there's only matzah and maror. B'dafka when there's only matzah and maror. And the Jewish people are still getting together every year and celebrating Yetzias Mitzrayim, celebrating their relationship with Hashem. All of those miracles in that initial stage were worth it for the ba'avor zeh, wherever they are. And this again underscores the inner content of what we're calling of Seder night, of Yetzias Mitzrayim. And the truth is that this really brings all of Pesach together. It began with the Korban Pesach, but the solidifying of our relationship with Hashem came 7 days later, or 7.5 days later, at Kriyas Yamsuf. There's something about, and it was a process. These 7 days are a cumulative process. And what you have on day seven, it began on day one, but it finishes on day seven. How do we see this? Hashem is not called our king until day seven. It's the first time we have that reference, which is in Shir HaSayam. Hashem Yimloch Le'olam Va'ed. As we reiterate in the morning and the evening, U'malchusov Ratzon Kibulo Aleihem, Malchuschara Uvanecha, the concept of Hashem's kingship is almost introduced by what we saw at Kriyas Yamsuf. Whereas we saw the Egyptians being punished through miracles in Egypt, but we were saved through a miracle. It was done directly for us. It had a different relationship and effect on the way that we entered now into this connection with Hashem. And once that connection is solidified, it's there for all time. Even if a person is facing adverse circumstances, he never loses this. And he's the freest of men. And that is the biur of the Medrash that we started with, which sees the source of Mesubim in the words, Vayasev Elokim Es Ha'am Derech HaMidbar. Hashem took the Jewish people on a circuitous route to where? To the Yam Suf. And what was the result of that? As a result of Hashem taking us in that roundabout way and leading us to the Yam Suf, we attained a connection which means even Oni Shebi Yisrael, Lo Yeshev at Sheyosev. He shouldn't eat, Lo Yochel at Sheyosev, he shouldn't eat until he's Mesubim. And what's the thematic connection? What's the causational connection? Because as a result of what we attained through the completion of the process, on day seven at Kriyas Yamsuf, Malchusov Ratzon Kiblu Aleihem, even the poorest of men is the freest of men. And on Seder night, because of the Vayasev, he is now Mesev, Lo Yochel. So I think these are certainly thoughts to accompany us. Of course, so much happens on Seder night. It has its own energy. It has its own direction. But these basic themes, if we can keep them in mind, believe are certainly of great value. And Mitz Hashem, this Pesach should be a decisive step towards, as the more we face backwards and tap into the gula at the root level, the more we can look forward with confidence to the speedy advent of the Geula Shelema, as the larger piece of the Afikoman comes back from its tzofen, and we're all come back here to Eretz Yisrael with Simchas Olam al Roshenu. I wish you all Chakoshe v'Sameach. We'll meet again in Mitz Hashem in 2 Mondays' time. All the very best.